Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi there. I'm Janet. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet. What is a podcast?
It's like the radio, but there's no music, and literally anyone can do one at any moment about any subject. And there's a billion of them.
Sounds great. Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 4, Jason Mendoza. Gianni reveals to Eleanor that he doesn't belong in the good place and that he's really a drug-dealing Filipino-American DJ named Jason Mendoza from Jacksonville. His prayer room is actually filled with video games. Eleanor and Chidi try to convince Jason to hide his real identity. Tahani organizes the launch of a new restaurant, which Jason uses as the opportunity to tell the truth. Eleanor creates a diversion, which ends up causing a giant sinkhole to open in the floor. Guest cast includes Jamie Denbo, David Ferguson, Josh Siegel, and Eugene Cordero. My guests today are writer and co-executive producer Joe Mandy and Manny Jacinto, who plays Gianyu, and Jason Mendoza. Welcome. Everything is fine.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. So we're talking this week about episode 104.
Cool.
Yes.
What did you know at the time about this character? You knew that you'd speak eventually.
Yeah. I mean, with 104, I think it was almost like going back to the actual audition, because this was finally when I could come out and be the guy that I auditioned for. So it was super cool. And I was also very antsy at the time, because everybody was like, man, this guy has the most cursed job of not having to speak. And like, little did they know. So it was good to kind of make everybody, like, surprise everybody, and especially even some of our co-stars, like Jamila, right, and Darcy. Same with Will. They never heard me speak that way before yet. It was only when we did the table read that they were like, what the heck is going on? So it was super exciting.
Was it weird that you had to spend three episodes? I mean, you were silent for a lot of it. Did you know that as part of the audition process, that there would be three full episodes of not much?
Mike and Drew sat me down, I think, a week before we started shooting, and that's when they kind of broke the whole twist to me, and that I'm going to be this silent Buddhist monk. And I was all for it. I was like, hey. And it was a great way to kind of ease my way in, you know, especially on a show like this when you have, like, these juggernauts, like Ted Danson and Kristen Bell, and, like, you don't know how to act around them or how they're going to be. So it was nice to be a fly on the wall and just observe. So that was really cool.
That is very cool. We had Ellen Yang on in a previous episode of this podcast, talking about the episode just prior to this. And do you remember if there was anything on the page for the moment when you comforted Ted? You sort of, he was having a, you know, fake existential crisis, and you calmed him.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing going through my mind was, like, I'm touching Ted Danson. I'm just like, this is actually happening. Just don't stop sweating. Try and calm your heartbeat down. It'll be okay. But yeah, that was probably the only thing that was going through my mind. But yeah, I mean, that, and he's just a super cool guy. He makes you feel super comfortable to play around and, you know, be around him. So
we've spent ample time already on this show talking about just what a great dude he is.
Yeah.
He and Kristen both. I mean, everybody associated. Mm-hmm. It seems like Mike, you know, really cultivates great groups of people. Joe, it seems like no mistake that you are writing the episode where this character gets introduced.
Yeah.
This seems top dead center in your wheelhouse.
Exactly. I think I had a lot of influence on the Jason Mendoza character. And it's funny that Manny mentioned how nervous he was for this episode, because everyone was nervous. I mean, because it was this thing where we were four episodes in, and
right.
he hadn't spoken a word. So I remember it was a night shoot, and it wasn't just me at Video Village as the writer, but it was the director and then Mike and Morgan and David Hyman. It was just like everyone.
Executive producers.
All the producers were there just because like we were like, well, we need to make sure that he's as good as he was in his audition. So it was a very, like, I'm sure, nerve-wracking thing for him to just see like everyone in charge of the show at the Video Village,
it
making sure he could like speak. And then after one take, we were like, oh yeah, it's fine.
Because it had been months in between, right? Like between your audition process and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe we had a month hiatus between the pilot.
Yeah, there was a hiatus.
There was
a big,
at least a pretty big break
between
like the first and second episode. So I was like...
Right. So it was very funny because there was a lot of nervousness before that first shot, and then it was fine after that.
I guess it's interesting story wise because with the exception of introducing the notion that Eleanor is there by mistake, this was like probably the second biggest reveal in the arc of the season to say like, hey man, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not who I was.
It's also like one of the first real big twists of the show. It's like this guy who you just assume, oh, this is a Silent Monk character.
Right.
That's his thing. That's the joke, is that he's almost like a foil just there for Tahani. And it's like, oh, wait, he's way more complex than that. And he's just pulling this game because he's afraid to talk, you know. It was pretty interesting.
That's funny you should mention that they were all there. I thought that was just the norm. Now looking back, it was like, holy crap. Yeah, that's
that was judge,
right,
jury
now.
And executioner waiting to see if you still had it.
Yeah, I was nervous too, because I was like borderline uncool with my advocacy to cast Manny.
Really?
Like, really getting in Mike's face about it.
Really?
Right, because his audition was crazy. It was so funny. It was like, we kept a section of his audition tape on the desktop computer. Like, we would just play parts of his audition because it was cracking us up.
And was it like, the segment about, I don't just want to be a DJ in Jacksonville?
No, the audition, the actual line was, you squeaked. What was it? It was like, why are you going to talk bad about it? It was just a performance choice that we were like, we laughed every time. And so it was like, well, why are we even questioning this? Let's just go with this Manny dude.
I love it.
Yeah, Joe was definitely, he's a big advocate for me. That's why I give him like 10% of my paycheck.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize you were also worked
as
a representative.
His manager. It's probably a conflict of interest.
There was such a brief moment between, I guess, silent Jianyu, and then when you still seem a little Jianyu-y when you're like, I've been waiting for you, or you don't belong here. Admit it. And then the first time you say homie, it's such a great, like, because it's two reveals of like, oh, one, he speaks.
Yeah.
And then you go like, oh, this is not at all who we thought this was.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was done really well, where you think, oh, he's going to be some sort of nemesis for Eleanor. And then within 5 seconds, it's like, oh, he's like a helpless.
Oh, he needs help.
We were actually like, when we were coming up with the character, I forgot who compared the Jason character to a wet cat. But that's like how we kind of wrote him season one. It was just like this helpless mess that like Eleanor just, you know, he's a wild feral cat, but also needs help, you know?
Does some of this man-child character exist in you? Why were you tapped to help, you know, devise the person who, you know, locked himself in a safe?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of that is just the room just coming up with like the wildest person. But I know that I had just done a stand-up show a few months prior to getting hired on The Good Place in Jacksonville. And I was just blown away by the city itself and how weird it was. It like made a real impact on me.
Describe it.
I think it's the second or third biggest city in Florida, but also seems to be a ghost town.
Yeah.
Like there are just whole swaths of the city that seem to be empty. It's just like a surreal place that seems to just sprawl to
eternity. Like, it's just, it's so large and uninhabited almost. And the show itself was very weird, and our hotel was weird. And just like everything about us, like, this whole city has like a very strange energy. And then when we started talking about, like, well, we already knew he was from Florida just based on some jokes we had been pitching. And then I was like,
Mike has very strong feelings on Florida.
Yes, he does. Yeah. And I was like, well, the weirdest place I've ever been is, I mean, he had, this character has to be from Jacksonville. Like, I don't think anyone's really planted Jacksonville on the map in, you know, pop culture before.
No, and it will likely never be the same after this.
Yeah, yeah.
You're acknowledging that the city's weird. You've been there?
Well, Joe and I, we went to see the first playoff game.
Yeah, the first round, Jaguars versus Bills.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. And yeah, when we were there, I think I landed there on, I want to say, a Friday night. And yeah, and I was running around the city just looking for something to eat, and nobody was there other than Bills fans.
Yeah, a lot of Bills
fans. Oh, I'm from Buffalo. Bills fans travel.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even in the morning when we were about to go to the game, it's a nice place. It's beautiful. And
don't walk this back.
No, it was nice.
I'm trying to give the place credit, but like,
no, it was good. We took a water taxi all the way to the stadium.
What?
Yeah. They were like, you could either take this random sketch van from the hotel.
Yeah.
Or you can take a water taxi.
It was so like, this stranger in a minivan will drive you. Or you can take a beautiful, like, motorized boat.
So this all took place because of your inclusion of an obsession with Blake Bortles, the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Why Blake Bortles? Were you a fan?
I would say I was a fan. I was aware of him and his sort of mediocrity almost. And
at the time. Yeah.
And it was like as a fan, I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves basketball fan, so I'm very...
Which is a completely different sport.
It's a different sport, but it's the same sort of pain of just like rude... Like, I know the feeling of being a super fan for a doomed franchise.
Sure.
So for a character like Jason to be like so pure in his fandom
consistently
for
hopeful.
This doomed franchise. It was funny, immediately funny to, like, particularly me and Mike and Yang and some other people in the room. There's like, it was just endless jokes about Blake Bortles and stuff. And then somehow, I don't know if it's the show, but he is now an elite quarterback. it's very funny. Yeah.
Now, right?
Yeah.
Have you met him?
No. Well, we were like 10 feet from him.
Literally
we yelled
Bortles
away. At him.
Yeah. But he was in the zone. We didn't want to.
Yeah, it was
pre-energy.
He was doing his pre-game warm-ups.
I would guess he gets yelled Bortles at him in a Jason Mendoza way from time to time.
Yeah,
I wouldn't doubt it.
But he obviously became a, you know, the trajectory of that team over the course of last season changed.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. So you credit yourself with that?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, too, just because, like, we talked about it before, where the Bortles joke wasn't actually going to make it on the screen.
Yeah, almost. The first Bortles reference, I believe, is when you blow up Acid Cat's speedboat.
Yeah, yeah.
You throw the Molotov cocktail and yell Bortles as if...
Wait, is that the very first time we hear it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
And it was pitched in a way where the way, like, jerks in pickup basketball games yell Kobe.
Right.
So that was the analog. And then Mike claimed for time he had to take it out. And I pestered him for every day for like a week, texting him like, put Bortles back in.
Were you even in a Bortles jersey at that point? I don't remember.
No.
Okay.
It was just...
So it's really a non sequitur.
Oh, it's completely. Yeah.
That's bananas.
And that was my plea with Mike was that he said it was for time. But I was like, it's voiceover. You could just keep he could scream.
Yeah.
You're not adding time, man. And I just like wore him down. I believe he said that was my birthday present that year.
Oh,
was just including the word Bortles on episode 104.
Yeah, and now it's become this a huge part of Jason.
In fact, in season 2, when you jump through the portal, he yells Portals.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The highest.
Like, where would we be with
the most near death moment? This kid is still going like, I'm gonna say it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous fun. Manny, I have to ask you this. Is Jason Mendoza based on anyone in your life?
I would say not just one person. A combination of a few people. Jason is very much of a bro, and I grew up in an all guys high school, so I'm able to mimic, you know, those types of dudes or bros, what have you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's definitely some people that I kind of go back to and like, oh yeah, you would kind of do that. And then once I kind of got my characteristics or tools, then I can just riff from there. So I can't give credit to Jason Mendoza to one particular person in my mind. So I'd say maybe I'd thank my high school for it.
Okay.
Yeah, probably give credit to them.
I like it. I just learned, speaking with Jamila on a previous episode of this show, that you improvise as Jason a fair amount.
Every once in a while, yeah. Something will always come up. I'll be given alts for alt jokes and stuff like
sure.
that, and that's always kind of like sometimes where I could riff off of a joke. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the times, because I am a pretty physical person, like I like to move around, so a lot of the improvisations that I do are kind of movement based or like physical based. And yeah, it's whether it be before or after a scene, I'll come up with something that it'll be as simple as just like, I forget what episode it's in, but when Ted has this like little monologue in the beginning and he's trying to come up with something very sincere and human, and it just comes off completely evil or just disconnected,
right?
And everybody's just like, no man, that doesn't work. And Jason's the only one who's like, I totally get you.
Wow, perfect.
Yeah, just little things like that. I'm not, yeah, like the things that Darcy does as an improviser, I can't compare myself to that, but small little details maybe.
Some of those alts are the most fun. That's when, you know, you've shot the scene and they feel like they have it. Mm-hmm. And someone like Joe will come up to you and go, are you up for some alternative lines?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where things like, I get quoted a lot in airports and in restaurants, butthole spiders.
Right, butthole spiders.
That comes up a lot, which I think it was like toilet spiders on the page.
It was toilet spiders. Right. And I figured we might as well get one that's butthole spiders.
We're testing out our new butthole spiders. They're enormous.
See, it's the same joke. It's just like 10% funnier. Yeah.
It may be 20.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. But those are such fun moments, and they often make gag reels and stuff because they're difficult to get through often because they are incrementally more ridiculous and therefore stranger and funnier as you go on. You mentioned your physicality. You have a background as a dancer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, him. Yeah.
Joe, we'll get to your dancing
Joe
career.
Joe as well. Yeah, yeah.
Did you study movement? What is your background?
I just fell in love with hip-hop early on when I was a kid. For sure. But then like hip hop dance when I was much older, maybe in like when I was 20 or 19. And I just couldn't stop moving or taking classes or just dancing in front of the mirror in my underwear. It was during a time when there was all these dance shows coming out, like So You Think You Can Dance, America's Best Dance Crew.
Right.
And whenever I would go out with friends at night, like I'm not much of a drinker, and you know, all I would like to do was, you know, move around and, you know, be silly or whatever. And I think it just stemmed from there. And having these shows influenced me to try out a class. And then from there, keep going. And even though I sucked, I just wanted to keep getting better.
Yeah.
And then it kept snowballing into performing in front of people. And it was kind of happy coincidence, or I don't know what you call it, just
serendipity.
Yeah.
But it's not something you grew up doing. It happened a little bit later, after your teens kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting.
And I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I don't know if Jason was originally supposed to be like a dancer.
Oh, I mean, that came from your
interest.
Reel. Like we started like, once we knew like Manny was going to play John Yu, we started like watching other stuff Manny had done as an actor. And
sure.
Then there was all this stuff with him breakdancing. And we're like, oh yeah, okay. So he's a breakdancer. We're going to utilize that.
That's where all the 60 person dance crew stuff came.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was all from you.
Yeah. I mean, initially he was just like kind of the character we conceived of was the joke was that he was the opposite of a Buddhist monk, so he was like a con artist, and you know, he was like, that was sort of like but it wasn't crystallized until like we started getting to know. I mean, that happens with all these shows. It's like once you get to know the actor, it's strange. We don't make caricatures, but we take like elements of the actor's background and personality, and it just becomes part of
and
the
rewrite towards
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Now they are they've snuck dancing into various segments. That seems like a pimp directed it directly at you.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm happy to do it.
I mean, this episode, right? When you have the DJ equipment, oh, and you yeah. do like a handstand.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was very cool.
It was awesome.
Was that in the script or was that something that you?
No. Yeah, I think it's. I think they were like. I think our first AD Steve at the time was kind of asking me, oh, what do you need in order to do?
You were like, I need a refrigerator box.
Yeah, yeah. I need an extra large TV. Yeah. Yeah, we kind of just riffed, and I think it was, yeah, Payment at the time, who's directing the episode. We were just kind of like figuring things out. And same thing with Payment, too. He was just super open to do whatever.
Yeah, that was it. It kind of felt like the inmates were running the asylum a
really?
Little bit. Because, like he and I were just, like, giggling at everything. And, it kind of felt like, well, wait, who's in charge of this episode? Wait, the two of us? Like, oh, no.
Yeah. It's like, very early in what's
yeah,
meant to be a franchise.
Episode four, yeah. Right. And we're already just, like, you know, when we knew we had a certain shot that, like, Mike would be happy with, where it's like, okay, well, now let's just keep doing fun
yeah.
runs
yeah.
until, like, the crew's mad at us.
Talk a little bit about Pillboy, sort of yeah. Jason's Jason, right?
Yeah, Jason's Jason, yeah. right.
Oh, man.
That's my buddy Eugene Cordero.
Yeah,
Eugene
unbelievable.
Is the best.
He's so funny.
I don't know. Like, we just clicked right away, and he's just so cool to work with and super funny. I think David Hyman was just like, yeah, we need to get a spinoff between you two guys.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Something.
The best.
Because we just have a blast being together. Yeah, and he's just so, so funny.
And we really like the idea of, because, like, I mean, John Yu certainly is, like, sheepish. And then, like, Jason is so scared, his energy in The Good Place, that we like the idea of these flashbacks of, a more confident, you know, seeing him in his element and then having a friend who is sort of a follower.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and we thought it was like an important like aspect of his character that he is like charismatic amongst his group of friends when he feels safe.
He's the leader.
Oh, yeah.
He's the leader of these dance crews. And Pillboy holds significant laud and honor for like he looks up to Jason
right.
like, oh, man, you did that.
You have dreams? That's yeah. lit.
You got dreams in life?
Where did you blow up a boat? Where was that?
Oh,
it was in
Long Beach or something, right?
San Pedro. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The most random place, yeah. But yeah, going back to that, I mean, I've talked to Mike about this before. It's one of the most rarest times that you will ever see a Filipino and a Filipino together in a scene where, mm-hmm. you know, you're not speaking Tagalog, you're not, you know, talking about being Filipino, you're just two Filipino dudes, you know? And it was super cool. And I believe I mentioned that to Eugene. We're like, yeah, this is dope.
This is lit.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like Mike's done that in a lot of the things that he's touched. I mean, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine also is an unusual and unusually and deliciously diverse cast. It's, I don't know, I'm a fan of his work.
I don't know if Yang mentioned this, but like it is interesting too that like it's certainly not like a stereotypical Filipino or Asian character, and then also that like you're making out with Tahani, and it's not weird or it's not played as a joke. It's like, oh, that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't like I know Yang specifically would talk about in the room like you don't really see that often that like Asian actor gets to play that kind of part. You know,
right.
It's pretty cool.
It's huge, yeah.
Jamila asked us to ask you how she rates as a kisser.
I'll give her a 10.
Out of 20?
No.
You just mouthed the words out of 20.
No. She's, I don't know how to answer that question without making myself and her feel uncomfortable, but yeah, give her a 10 out of 10.
Oh.
Yes.
Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a moment and listen to a clip.
You literally haven't said a word since we got here?
Yeah.
When I say I'm meditating, I'm just trying to figure out what the fork is happening. I think we might be in an alien zoo or on a prank show.
No, Jean, you were dead.
Whoa, that's a dope prank. Gotta give it up.
Okay, I need to make sure that this isn't some sort of weird trap. Is your real name Jean Yu?
No, it's Jason Mendoza. And by the way, everyone here thinks I'm Taiwanese. I'm Filipino. That's racist. Heaven is so racist.
But Tahani said that you helped Michael by putting your hand on his chest and doing some sort of healing magic.
Yeah, a nurse did that to calm me down once when I crashed my jet ski into a manatee.
You crashed your jet ski into a manatee?
Yeah, I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. That happens a lot.
What did you do for a living?
I was an amateur DJ, specializing in EDM, electronic dance music. I was also an amateur hip-hop backup dancer, an amateur body spray inventor. I did pranks on Vine.
None of those are jobs. What did you do to make money?
Oh, I sold fake drugs to college kids.
This clip comes from episodes found on Amazon, Google Play, and iTunes. And watch recent episodes on the NBC app.
Were there other things listed? I loved, Eleanor asked what Jason's, what his job was. And yes. There are all these non-money scam.
A lot of amateur this and amateur that.
Right.
Yeah.
Were there ridiculous things on that list that you, that didn't make it?
I don't think so. But what's so funny to me right now, because I just watched the episode last night, is Vine Star. It's like Vine doesn't even exist anymore. Like, holy crap.
That is so much
more funny now because it's gone.
Yeah.
But it was a going concern at the time. There were Vine Stars, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they come from places like Jacksonville. A lot of them.
The prank show is fascinating because that comes back in episode 113 where Jason says, "Oh, dip, I called it."
Yeah.
Was that planned? Was that a little bit of a bookending?
It was a bit of book. That was written just as a joke, I believe, in 4. And then as we started breaking the finale, we realized, like, wait, Jason's closest of all of those. So we were like, we've got to make sure we reference that. It is basically a prank show.
On the... I've said this before on this show. This is the only show I've ever been a part of where I've actually gone down the rabbit hole to read every comment on every website just to see if, you know, prior to episode 113, anybody sniffed it and called it. And no one did. And afterwards, people did exactly what Jason did, which they were like, wait a second, I joked about this, you know, 6 months ago.
Right.
But I never thought that that was going to be the twist of season one.
I mean, and it's a credit to the actors for sure that they, like, specifically Ted, that he was able to play the part season one so earnestly that there's no way you think this could possibly be the case. And even though, like, another thing, talk about bookending, in the first or second episode, he kicks a dog into the sun. That's a, couldn't be a more clear sign of a villain.
Yeah.
And somehow he buys it back, and it's all performance.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about Teacup getting kicked into the sun before, but you're right. That should have been
the clearest indicator that he's a demon. Like, he gets frustrated. He briefly, like, genuinely freaks out, and the first thing he does is kick a dog
puppy
into the sun.
Oh, my goodness. That should have been an indication.
Yeah.
We
almost took it out because we were like, that's too obvious. Mm.
Yeah. It doesn't... It doesn't change it at all.
No.
That's something that we've talked about as well that I find fascinating about the show is that it was a great show prior to any Lost-esque twist.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
before there was some, you know, double secret chess going on that we weren't aware of.
Yeah.
Like, it was still a really fascinating show to watch these people try to learn how to become better.
Yeah, I think that's also just sort of indicative of how quickly TV is changing.
Mm-hmm.
That if this show existed in the early 90s, we wouldn't have even gotten to the revelation. I believe it was episode 6 where she admits that she doesn't belong there.
Oh, yes.
That confession would have been like the finale of season 2 or 3 of a typical sitcom, you know, 20 years ago.
Right.
This game would have just lasted much longer. But
yeah.
I think like audiences are more... not intelligent, but more savvy, and
right.
and just expect more from their TV shows. So like we are, like our whole mentality is just to like everything. We always have our foot on the gas pedal, just like keep moving and
beat them to the to suspecting that something's going to, a twist is coming.
Yeah.
Or that's so interesting.
Or just get to the twist before you expect it. Yeah,
yeah.
Did you have any standards trouble? Any censors trouble with Butthole?
No, thank God. That. Yeah, that's the that I mean, put that on my tombstone, man. I couldn't be more proud of a joke.
The way that it plays initially is obviously butthole.
Yeah.
And then to call it back, I love when Chidi comes in and goes,
oh, yeah.
You're saying bud.
I think the first draft was we had that joke for every character with them walking in and being like, oh,
I see
okay.
What you're saying.
Oh, all right. Budhole. Gotcha.
Manny, what would be in your real life budhole?
My real life budhole.
Yeah.
My buds. A bunch of friends hanging out.
Are you a video game guy though?
I used to be, not so much anymore. I didn't do much, to be honest.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You were saying that when you came in. You're on a hiatus week right now.
I just don't do any. Like, I guess because when I'm working, I focus on that and do the best that I can. And when I have a break, I need to reset.
Sure.
And just sleep and relax. Because I can get pretty stressed when I work. So then I tire myself out.
No, like a big bed. In your butt.
Exactly.
For you and your butts.
Huge comfy bed, yeah.
For you and all your butts.
Yes, yes.
When you were when you got hired for the show, you were living in Vancouver, right?
I moved down to kind of scope things out.
Very
in
cool.
Los Angeles.
So that was fairly recently, just a few years ago. How are you finding it?
It's good. And going back to my buds, I think that's that's like I think the biggest thing that's, or the most important thing, being out here in LA, because LA is so big and
right.
Even just to meet somebody for a coffee, like you got to go through 2 hours of traffic.
It's planning, yeah.
And that's your whole day. But yeah, it's still an adjustment for sure.
Do you get up to Vancouver a lot?
I try to, yeah. I'll work there every once in a while. And my family, my parents are still there and all my close friends are up there. So I'll try and.
That's very cool. Joe, describe your butthole.
I will say that like my goal in life is get to a place where I have like an indoor basketball court.
Oh, wow.
It's an aspirational butthole for sure, but like a indoor basketball court with like a TV set up.
The TV seems like an easy
backboard.
Yeah, two backboards, TVs with different shows playing. Yeah,
I feel like if you moved anywhere else in the country, that's fairly easily achievable, right?
Yes,
it's having it here that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I have like a certain, I have a certain level I need to get to before I can move to like El Paso and build myself a indoor basketball court.
Mike has talked about wanting to, within the context of the show, exploit the infinity of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the aspect in which that's made evident here is the sinkhole in the restaurant.
Right.
Tahani has planned this, you know, event to open this restaurant, and literal mayhem happens.
Yes.
And of course, this is the opportunity that Jason has taken to say, I'm going to confess who I am and get this over with. And plot-wise, the distraction that Eleanor creates creates the sinkhole, worsens the sinkhole.
Yeah, worsens it. Yeah.
Is it fun to play with finding something in every episode to exploit things falling from the sky or lava monsters?
It is. I mean, the goal is to always have like an element of that infinite world or this magic universe, but not use it as a crutch. So that was the sinkhole was that for this episode was, you know, creating at the time, you know, we all know now that it was Michael's plan and Michael created it. But in the moment, it seemed like it was actually Eleanor's doing and it was spreading. I mean, that was like the cliffhanger for episode four was that it was spreading, could theoretically take over
Envelope.
The neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mentioned lava monsters. Our listeners know you as a writer and co-executive producer, but you are also Todd.
I am Todd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we had to change it. I think technically he's Todrick.
Yes, it did show up somewhere as Todrick.
Yeah, I think like we named him Todd, and then that name did not clear, so we had to change it to Todrick. Hempel.
That's ridiculous. Why is that? I mean, because
there's some person in America named Todd Hempel.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant there was
to, like,
a lava monster.
This all out. Todd Hempel can
Todd
sue us.
The lava
there
monster.
Is there is yeah, he's that's taken. Right. There's one lava monster somewhere in America named Todd, and they were like, "Yeah, that's we can't do that.
Hill's,
offensive.
That part, yeah. That's racist.
Yeah, heaven's racist.
That's
yeah.
a magma monster. That's not a lava monster.
Yeah,
that's
We don't say lava anymore.
Manny, you at an Emmys panel the other night described something fantastic, which is that during the video when Kristen and Mike are describing what happens at the end of the first season, everybody else got taken. They had said to you guys, come meet us after lunch in the cafeteria. We have something to say. Everyone else assumed that they were being fired, which is exactly the reaction that I would have. That would make me go, come to the principal's office. Like, my heart would pound. I would replay in my mind everything I've ever said or done to offend a network executive or what have you. All of the breakdancing handstands I didn't accomplish. and I would be certain that I would be being fired. You had a different reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't necessarily think that I was going to, you know, get the opposite, get promoted. But I legitimately thought that because Kristen was, you know, she still kind of had House of Lies and Ted's this huge little TV legend. And I was just like, you know, they probably have things to do. They don't want to hang out with us. Yeah. So I was like, okay, maybe this meeting is about them leaving and passing on the torch. And I mean, when I thought about that, I was like, oh man, Mike, that's a bad idea. You should not do that.
Yeah, Mike, you should really keep
Ted dancing around. You should really keep him around. Yeah. But yeah, that's where my head went. And then
to the opposite of getting fired, you thought, we're taking it over.
You're like, I'm Eleanor now.
But that was one of the theories, I think, one of the most outrageous.
Your reaction to that video is one of my favorites because it is so physical. You have this, I suppose, fairly Jason-y moment of like, swoop, like everything in you as though a little bit of electricity flows, you know.
Or like a cat getting wet.
Or like a wet cat.
Yeah, I literally wanted to leave. I wanted to get out of the room and just like start running around because I just couldn't contain what I just heard.
It's a fun
moment. That was such a relief for the writers too, because we spent, you know, 80% of the season having to pull, mostly it was Ted, but Ted and Kristen would pull us aside and ask us like if what they're doing fits for like the long game. You know, like, will that performance for that scene make sense in episode 13 when one watching it over, you know? So it was like, it was a lot to juggle and then have to hide that info from four of the cast members, you know, until the time Mike was ready to tell them. It was crazy.
This is a very unusual half hour of American network television.
It really is, yeah.
And I am a fan. Joe Mandy, what's good?
I'm going to say that the ASPCA is good.
Oh, very cool.
My wife works there.
Oh.
And but even if she didn't, I still would. I would go out on a limb and say it's good.
You're saying it that even if your wife didn't work for the ASPCA, you wouldn't be cruel to animals.
Correct. Yeah. Well, I you know, who knows?
I mean, I guess.
But I'm as of right now, I'm confident that I'm not, and you shouldn't be, and you should support them. They're a good organization.
Manny, what's good?
The ASPCA is good.
Nice.
I'm not too sure. Oh man, this makes me sound like a jerk because like
it doesn't.
I don't know.
What's a breakdancing move I could learn here on an audio only podcast?
I think you could learn the baby handstand.
Oh
yeah!
Whoa, he's doing it! Oh, nice man.
Joe Mandy and Manny Jacinto, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure,
thank you, Mark.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now go do something good.
Hi there. The podcast is over. I think what I'm feeling is sadness.
Oh, don't worry, Janet. This podcast is the most perfectly engineered invention since the paperclip.
Fun fact, the man who invented the paperclip is in The Bad Place for tax evasion.
It's available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop saying podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
Music composed by David Schwartz. Yay.